Blog Talk Radio.
I have a lot of fun stories for you today, but a lot of sad stories as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about people who are playing defense for Hillary Clinton, and they are really starting to get under my skin. I mean, really, really, really starting to get under my skin. I don't think people get it. Like, you don't have to fucking defend everything about her just because she's up against Trump. It's unbelievable the lengths people go to try to deflect legitimate criticism from her. We'll talk about that. We have a bunch of stuff later on the continued crackdown on pro-Palestinian free speech. We have Pacman on his show. He had an interesting conversation about conspiracy theories. I'm going to give my two cents on that. We'll discuss, there's been a bunch of different scandals involving the burkini, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's basically a Muslim bathing suit for, you know, devout women. We're going to talk about that controversy. And what else I got for you, man? I don't know. Why are you asking questions? Oh, the honor killing in Pakistan? Wait until I give you the details on that one. Oh, that's unreal, and it's so sad, and it shows we got to make some changes, man. We got to make some changes to the law. All right, let's get started, and I'm going to do that. We don't usually cover stories like this, but I feel like we should because it's super-duper important. Oh, fuck me. I just got water all over my fucking pad on the computer that I used to swipe back and forth. Let me fix this real quick. So professional here on Secular Talk. When was the last time you saw a CNN anchor do that? We got water on the pad, guys. Water on the pad. All right, we got to cut. Wolf, sing some show tunes. Play us out here, buddy. Play us out. Oh, no. Did I really fuck up the computer? Oh, goodness. All right, we'll see. I don't know. I feel like I should do a little restart here, but... whatever. What are you going to do? All right, the situation in Italy. Let's get started. There was an earthquake in Italy 2 days ago that measured a 6.2, and it absolutely wreaked havoc on the country. At least 240 people are dead. Thousands of buildings are destroyed. The relief efforts are continuing as I talk to you guys right now. And, I mean, the country's in shambles. When you look at the pictures, you know, it just blows you away as to how thoroughly some of these buildings are destroyed. And, again, so many people dead. And it just makes you realize, man, I mean, I know this is a weird thing to say in relation to this story, but we're just so goddamn fragile. And you could be sitting in your house watching TV, and you blink, and the next thing you know, you're laying under a pile of rubble. And natural disasters, they really fucking get me. They really get me, because it just shows you how powerless we can be in the face of Mother Nature. I mean, not that this is in any way comparable for what I went through specifically, but I live in New York, and I live close enough to have felt the effects of Hurricane Sandy. I had lost power for over a week when that happened. Obviously, I didn't get the brunt of it. There are parts of Staten Island, for example, that were just fucking submerged and people's lives were ruined. I was much, much further inland, so I didn't have those kinds of issues, but we lost power for a week, and I remember just how fierce the winds were and just thinking, God damn, man. In the blink of an eye, all this shit could be over because we're like, what? I'm not fucking made of steel. I'm not immortal. I'm not special. This is, it just puts everything in perspective and lets you know how special our time on this earth really is, given what we are. We're a fucking weak bag of flesh that could just pop. And I feel horrible, horrible, horrible for everybody in Italy going through this right now. And look, in my mind, when I see stories like this, I always think, well, this is why we're supposed to have the Red Cross. This is should be why we have the UN. I mean, international relief effort should be balls to the wall in circumstances like this. And, you know, I would expect it to work the other way around, too. If there was something that happened here in the U.S., some natural disaster, I would expect the rest of the world to say, okay, well, we're going to send doctors, we're going to send food, we're going to send all the aid that you guys need, don't worry about it. And it's just a common, decent thing to do for humanity. So I hope they get absolutely everything that they need. I hope people are able to rebuild their lives, and I hope the death toll does not tick up anymore. But as of right now, it does not look pretty. It looks like a very damaging situation, and it looks like the death toll is going to tick up, and there's only going to be more and more bad news coming out of there. And our hearts break looking at what happened. Now let's go to the Clinton Foundation, and yet again, okay, I have to try to maintain my calm, my cool during this one because the arguments people are using shouldn't be uttered by human beings. Huffington Post decided to play defense for Hillary Clinton when it comes to the issue of the Clinton Foundation. This week, the AP ran a story pointing out that more than half of Hillary's meetings with private citizens when she was Secretary of State were with donors. They were people who gave money to the Clinton Foundation. Well, now Vox first fired back, and then Huffington Post followed suit, you know, pointing out a lot of the things that were mentioned in Vox, and they ran this giant headline. AP witch hunt on Hillary? No. No. That's really the argument that you're going to make? So, what points do they go on to bring up? Well, their arguments are, number one, this tweet from the Associated Press insinuated that it was half of all of Hillary Clinton's meetings that were with donors, not half of the meetings with private citizens only, so that's misleading and that's a problem. Okay, I covered this story. They made crystal clear in the article. We're saying that it was half of the meetings with private citizens that happened to be donors. So half of the private citizens she met with were donors. Now, they also go on to say, hey, a lot of the heads of state and people from various governments that she met with were donors also. But we're just going to write that off because she's supposed to meet with heads of state anyway and people in different governments anyway, as Secretary of State, obviously, so we're not even going to pay attention to that. And what did I say at the time? You can go back and watch the segment. I said, I think they're being far too kind to Hillary Clinton. Why? Because we have evidence, you know, namely brought to us by the International Business Times, that in the case of Saudi Arabia, for example, they paid Bill Clinton a tremendous amount of money for speeches, and then lo and behold, soon after, you had Hillary Clinton approve a stalled weapons deal that was going to go to Saudi Arabia. So the argument is, well, they wanted to speed up the approval of this, so they gave Bill Clinton some money for the Clinton Foundation, and then look at that, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton approved their weapons deal. So, but in the AP article, they say, okay, pay no attention to that because, oh, she met with people from Saudi and whatever, but she's Secretary of State, she's going to meet with them anyway, so it is what it is. No, no, that's not how I view it. If there are people who are donating to her from other governments, do I think that has influence? Yeah. You want to know why? Because human nature exists, you dipshits. If somebody gives me or my spouse a couple $100,000 or a couple $1 million, I think that I'm going to like them and maybe do something for them that I wouldn't do otherwise. So, but again, they're being too kind. And the argument from Huffington Post and Vox is you're being unfair because in the tweet, which, by the way, is limited to, what, 140 characters? In the tweet, it looks like what you're saying is half of all her donors were Clinton Foundation donors, not just the private citizens. So we gotcha, fucking anti-Hillary witch hunt. Oh, come on. And then also they go on to say that, this is misleading because, you know, many of the causes of the donors were noble. For the 9,812th time, nobody is denying that the Clinton Foundation does some good around the world. The argument is there is pay to play going on. So in other words, if you have somebody, whether it be a private citizen, a corporation, or a foreign government or a foreign entity, give money to Hillary Clinton and her foundation and the Clinton family in general, that they will get special favors because she's in government and she has power. That's the argument. Nobody is saying that, hey, with that money, sometimes they do some good. Everybody acknowledges that. Everybody acknowledges that. But what you do not acknowledge is what I just mentioned before. That's just one example. Saudi Arabia gives the money to Bill Clinton. Boom, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton approves the fucking weapons deal. There's other examples with, you know, oil companies, you know, just to give another one. Hillary Clinton pushed fracking around the world. You have instances with in South Sudan. It was the State Department that approved an exemption for their child soldiers. Now, I don't know. You think that maybe has something to do with some donors, whether it be, you know, defense contractors here or whether it be, you know, some other people involved with the government in South Sudan? I mean, what other reason would there be to say child soldiers, totally cool, and we're on the side of that as we pretend and we go around the world and lecture everybody about human fucking rights? So don't be naive, don't be stupid, but that's what they're being. And then they also go on to say, you ready for this argument? This one is cute. One of the donors was Ben Affleck. And? One of the donors was Ben Affleck. And? So, yeah, because he's a celebrity. So there can't be pay-to-play and favors going on? Seriously, we're having this conversation. We just covered the story the other day. Justin Timberlake and Jennifer Aniston and a bunch of other celebrities are doing a $33,000 per plate fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. Now, these idiots can look and go, well, what do you mean? Money has no influence on politics. It's just Justin Timberlake raising the money. He's not asking for favors. Really? Is that your claim? No, that's not our claim. Look at the other people who showed up to the fundraiser, dipshit. CEOs, other people with power who, yes, have business in front of the government. They're the ones who are going to pay the $33,000. They're the ones who are going to want the favors. Like, why are people being purposefully dense? Why are they being obtuse and trying to not see the reality of it? I asked that question, but I know the answer, because there's so many Democratic loyalist hacks that they, in a heartbeat, they would make the argument, fucking Koch brothers give money to the Republicans, all the big oil companies give money to the Republicans, and then guess what the Republicans do? They go, climate change? What climate change? I don't know what you mean. And they continue to give giant corporate welfare checks and subsidies to the oil companies. So does money affect politics? When it's the Republicans, you bet your sweet ass it affects them. Obviously, they're taking money from ExxonMobil and Chevron. What, is ExxonMobil and Chevron giving it to them? You know, because they like their stance on abortion? Please. No, they're getting favors for it. Every Democratic loyalist would make that argument when it comes to Republicans. Suddenly, when it comes to sweet, sweet Hillary Clinton, well, no. Come on, money? Getting favors for money? Never. Corruption is not a thing. Legalized bribery is not a thing. The money doesn't affect her, as far as I'm concerned. You have to stop over-defending Hillary. Let me repeat that. You have to stop over-defending Hillary. That doesn't help her. Like, I think these morons think that it helps her. Like, well, I got an idea. If we pretend that the money doesn't affect her, that'll help her against Donald Trump. It's not going to help her. It's going to hurt her because you're undermining all of your credibility. You have no more credibility when you start to argue the money doesn't affect Hillary Clinton and the money going into the Clinton Foundation doesn't affect Hillary Clinton. So all your credibility is gone because you decided Donald Trump is so bad, therefore it necessitates that Hillary Clinton is an absolute angel. You don't have to argue that. You can be honest and direct and straightforward and say, Hillary Clinton is a disaster. She's an ultimate insider. She's massively corrupt, and she's part of the system. But you know what? Donald Trump is a over-the-top fascist buffoon who's profoundly dangerous and doesn't know anything about the world and can really, really, you know, put us up Schitt's Creek without a paddle, and it is worse. You can make that argument. People are receptive to that argument. You want to know why? Because it's kind of true. You know what people are not receptive to? Hillary doesn't do any favors for money. I don't know what you mean. Really, what about the story of the bankruptcy bill? Remember this? It was Elizabeth Warren who told us about this, where she was against a bill that biased the bankruptcy laws in favor of the corporations. This was before she was an elected official. After she became senator from New York, what happened? She flipped on that bill and was in favor of it. Why? She took a tremendous amount of money when she ran for Senate. That's why. She used to be in favor of single payer. Did you know this? All of a sudden, she takes a lot of money from the health industry, and she's not in favor of it anymore. Isn't that weird? Isn't that funny how that works? And the numbers you're seeing on the screen right now, this is just in a brief time span when she wasn't in government later on. So she had already taken more money from the health industry and then flipped her vote. And, you know, you guys have seen the numbers in her time off for the personal speaking gigs. She took a lot of money giving speeches to Goldman Sachs, giving speeches to other giant financial firms. The idea that she's not going to return the favors is ludicrous. So you have – please, this point needs to land with these Democratic loyalists. You're hurting her. You're not helping her when you pretend like she's an angel because Donald Trump is, you know, a really, really horrible person and candidate. You can be honest about everything and you know, still win people over. But that's the thing, is they were never interested in truth. They were never interested in the actual fundamental problems in the system and fixing it. You know what they do? They just play for a team. Rah, rah, Team Democrat, and that's the end of the conversation. Well, that's not what I'm like, okay? I actually give a shit about the individual policy goals that are liberal goals because I actually care about the American people, and I want to set up a system that actually functions properly and is reasonable. So I'm not with them. It's not ride or die Team Blue for me. It's not like that's the end goal. That's it. The end goal is just to get Democrats in office and that's it. But if the fucking Democrats are not going to do the shit that we want them to do policy-wise, why the fuck would I be so rah-rah Team Democrat? That doesn't make any sense, does it? But again, that's how I think. I care about the individual policy issues. I care about getting the money out of the system. These guys just care about, I got to get my team elected. So we know what you are. It's sad. It's pathetic. And your arguments aren't convincing anybody. Like, they think they're so brilliant. Like, Ben Affleck was one of the donors, so therefore money now has no influence on her in any way. Dude, they've raised $3 billion when you count all the different avenues, how they've raised money. So the Clinton Foundation, super PACs, various campaigns directly into their own pockets. The Clinton family's raised $3 billion. Seriously? That's the point you're going to make? All the $3 billion they raised from all these different very powerful donors. They never once took a phone call for that. They never once set up a meeting over that. They never once, you know, pushed some policy things for that. If you believe that, you're either a liar or you are the most naive person on the planet. But either way, I'm done with you. Apparently, there are some lunatic political thinkers who are now openly musing that perhaps ISIS is not the worst thing in the world. So Benjamin Norton reports here, according to a think tank that does contract work for NATO and the Israeli government, the West should not destroy ISIS. Why? It, quote, can be a useful tool in undermining Iran, Hezbollah, Syria, and Russia, argues the think tank's director. Quote, the continuing existence of ISIS serves a strategic purpose, wrote Ephraim Inbar, in The Destruction of Islamic State is a Strategic Mistake, a paper published on August 2nd. So he goes on to share, or excuse me, he goes on to argue that defeating ISIS would be a, quote, strategic folly that will enhance the power of the Moscow-Tehran-Damascus axis. The West should seek the further weakening of ISIS, but not its destruction. A weak ISIS is counterintuitively preferable to a destroyed ISIS. This is sheer lunacy. And you know what this is? The exact kind of thinking on foreign policy that has gotten us into the disaster we're in today, namely the chessboard way of thinking. So in other words, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, and you might not be familiar with it because you're a normal person and your head's not up your own ass with establishment talking points and bullshit, the ideology behind this is everything goes back to the Cold War. Everything to this day goes back to the Cold War. There's nothing that rises above that in importance, and we need to keep that in mind. This is how these people think. So Russia is allied with who? Iran and Syria. So since Russia is with those people, and those people are fighting ISIS, because in the Syrian civil war, ISIS is one of the main rebel groups, and there's al-Nusra, the al-Qaeda affiliate, or former al-Qaeda affiliate in there, and other jihadists and Islamists. So since you have those countries fighting these jihadists, the idiots here in the West totally say, okay, forget the fact that jihadists are jihadists. Maybe it's okay because they're fighting our enemy. Our bigger enemy in their mind. They actually believe that Russia is a bigger enemy. Iran's a bigger enemy. The Syrian government is a bigger enemy. Really? Point me to the plans of Bashar Assad attacking Oklahoma. I'll wait. Doesn't exist. It doesn't fucking exist. So what they do is, since everything is through that prism and that spectrum of Cold War is the number one threat, and that's the number one thing we're worried about, that leads these morons to say, you know, maybe the worst terrorist group on the planet is not all that bad. Because they're fighting Russia, they're fighting Iran, they're fighting Syria. So, I mean, it is what it is. Don't destroy them. They actually help us. What a grotesque thing to believe. So in the process, you obviously, everybody knows, they're going to slaughter innocent Shia civilians, Sunni civilians. They're going to kill every atheist and Jew and Christian they cross paths with. They behead people. They ban music. They torture. They're just a fucking force for sheer evil. And these guys are like, well, don't care. Why? Because Russia bad. Look, I'm not saying Russia and the U.S., oh, everything's peachy and hunky-dory and it's great. No, of course we have our differences, and of course, you know, there's an issue there. But to say ISIS whatevs, because, you know, you have issues with Russia and Iran, I mean, that's just preposterously stupid. Like, you're making a joke of yourself. You're like a caricature of a human being. Your moral compass is so broken that you literally just rationalized ISIS existing. I mean, you want to talk about an ISIS apologist. You want to talk about, I know people use this term a lot, and I think misuse it a lot, but you want to talk about a regressive. Here's a regressive. Yeah, you know, ISIS, maybe not so bad. Maybe not so bad. Oh, goodness gracious. So this also reminded me of the Israeli defense minister. In January, he said, look, if it comes down to a choice between Iran or ISIS, I prefer ISIS. Again, why did he say it? I don't know. Iran is kind of maybe a bigger threat to us, but not really. So I prefer ISIS. You know, this is the kind of thinking that led to, for example, David Petraeus saying, maybe we should arm al-Qaeda to fight both ISIS and Assad. Kidding, we covered that story. So you have a U.S. general who thinks he's so brilliant saying, let's arm the people who did the largest terror attack on U.S. soil in our history. Think about how backwards that is and how illogical that is. The only way they can come to that conclusion is by using this kind of reasoning, by using this global chessboard ideology. Well, look, I'm here to tell you, that whole paradigm needs to be destroyed. because you actually have an opportunity here. The United States can sit down at the table with Russia. We could sit down at the table with the Syrian government, with Iran, who we also did the nuclear deal with recently. We could sit down with them, and yeah, you can invite our other allies, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, there. And we say, okay, guys, look, let's keep it real here. This is a problem that threatens the stability of all of our countries and the world. So we can put our differences aside here, and we can work together, and we can have a brighter future if we do that. You can make that argument, and that argument would be a very potent argument, because it's true. So you have an opportunity to make things better, but morons like this, you know, dig in deeper and make the situation worse and literally write articles saying, you know, maybe ISIS is not all that bad. No, ISIS is all that bad, and you're also all that bad in the intellect department for arguing this in public for a second. This is shameful. Okay. Next. Oops. Don't need that yet. Hold your horses, broski. For those of you, I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but hour-long show again today. No breaks, bitch! Unless there's some sort of issue, but I doubt it. All right. Next. We have a couple stories here today that highlight a continued trend of a crackdown on pro-Palestinian activism. Ben Norton of Salon reports here, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has signed legislation that will punish groups that endorse a boycott of Israel in protest of its violations of Palestinian human rights. It requires the New Jersey government to identify companies that support a boycott of Israel, raising fears that it would create a blacklist of institutions that back the growing Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, or BDS, movement. Under the new law, the State Investment Council, which manages more than $80 billion in pension assets, is legally obligated to divest from these blacklisted companies. Legal groups say the legislation is likely unconstitutional. Okay, so think about what they're doing here. They're going, do you have an opinion that the state government does not agree with? Well, then maybe there are extra consequences for you that don't apply to other people. Well, hold on now. Where's the line then? I mean, that's a genuine slippery slope. So you want to punish this kind of free speech. Who's to stop? What if somebody calls for a boycott of Saudi Arabia? Can you say, okay, no, you're not allowed to say things the state disagrees with. Now there's punishment for you. So just, you know, keep going further and further and further. Why not? Once you open that door and you set that precedent, it's not that long until you get to, did you just disagree with the wars that are going on right now? You do know that's basically treason, right? What, are you a traitor? Are you treasonous? What's happening here? So you disagree with our wars and you're speaking out against that. Well, now there's extra punishment for you that doesn't exist for other people. So the state does not approve of what goes on in your mind. And now, there's going to be consequences. Okay, you can't do that. That obviously violates the First Amendment. And that's what they're saying here. You have many legal groups who are saying this is clearly unconstitutional. You can't just single out one opinion and one belief and say, okay, well, that one is not okay, and the government is going to go after you for it. That's crazy. All right, so that's one story. Now, on top of this, understand there's been in the UK, there are anti-BDS laws that we've discussed before. In my state, New York, there was a recent anti-BDS law that's very similar to this one in New Jersey. Also, half of the states in the United States of America are now considering kinds of laws. Again, that's crazy. But there's more. So the Guardian reports here, Sheldon Adelson, the Nevada casino mogul and conservative mega donor, is leading a campaign against pro-Palestine groups on U.S. college campuses and has funded a group that has publicly accused individual students of supporting terrorism and promoting Jew hatred. The multi-million dollar effort, which has launched at 6 campuses in California, is targeting BDS. At the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, recent posters named 16 students and professors saying they, quote, have allied themselves with Palestinian terrorists to perpetuate BDS and Jew hatred on this campus. Wow. So they're running a campaign here to demonize people who support BDS. They're calling them anti-Semites, saying they're pushing Jew hatred, and saying they're with the Palestinian terrorists. Oh, come on. Come on. So think about this. In the first story, the Chris Christie story, and with all this stuff going on in the different states, they're punishing free speech. Now with this story, with Sheldon Adelson, they're doing false claims of bigotry. I need every single person who considers themselves a free speech warrior, a free expression warrior, and people who get very angry at false claims of bigotry. Somebody says racist, if somebody says, you know, xenophobe, maybe sometimes you call Donald Trump that, people come out of the woods, oh, he's not that, you're just saying that too much, it's not true. All those people who are super touchy about claims of racism and bigotry, all the people who are saying, oh, free speech, I know what you mean, everything I say ever is free speech, which, by the way, I totally agree with. The only exceptions are direct threats of violence, libel, and slander. So I'm on your team, but are you on your team? If you are, where the fuck are you? I need you to come out and say, you know what, even if there are many people, oh, I don't even agree with whatever, setting up a Palestinian state or whatever, but you have the right to express that without the government being punitive. Do you really believe in free speech? Well, where are you? Where the fuck are you? Where are you? It's funny. Every time you have people who claim, oh, we're the mantle of the First Amendment of free speech, they draw a neat little line when it comes to this because they don't agree with this opinion. So it's like, and also, think about it. Well, many of the same people, it's obviously not all of them, but many of the same people who say, okay, look, criticism of Islam does not equal bigotry against Muslims, which, again, I agree with. But people who say that, all of a sudden, when it comes to criticism of Israel, they say, that does equal anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. I've never seen a clear case of hypocrisy. I've never seen a clear case of it. And all the people, so if you bring up, if you're discussing a story about Muslim terrorism and you bring up, Christian extremism, they go, what are you doing? Whataboutery? You're doing whataboutery. Stick to the topic at hand. But funny, when you bring up the crimes of the Israeli government, oftentimes they say, yeah, but ISIS exists and why aren't you discussing that? Or why don't you talk about the Palestinians who do attacks sometimes and Hamas that does the attack? Well, now who's doing the whataboutery, bitch? So all fucking double standards all over the place. Look, we have to be consistent. I'm planting my flag, and I've been on this side all along, and my fucking record proves it if you look in the video description box on YouTube. It is true. Criticism of Islam, the doctrine of Islam, does not equal bigotry against all Muslims. It doesn't. It's also true that criticism of Judaism or criticism of the state of Israel does not equal anti-Semitism and hatred of all Jews. If you make those arguments that is bigotry, you're just a hack. You're a hack and you have no rebuttal. And if you really care about free speech, care about it when it's pro-Palestine. Don't immediately go to, well, I mean, and they had to do it because with the boycott, it makes sense for them to say you're not allowed to talk about that. And it makes sense to call the people to say they hate Jews because they hate Jews because they're pro-BDS. Nonsense, nonsense. I'm somebody who supports BDS, and I know many people who support BDS who say we support BDS to the ends of a two-state deal. So we're supporting BDS to force Netanyahu and the Israeli government to the table to get a two-state deal. So that's what many of us are pushing for. That's what we want. For you to pretend like everybody who supports BDS is just an anti-Semite and they have irrational Jew hatred, well, then you're part of the problem. And you're also part of the problem if you're on the side of cracking down on pro-Palestinian free speech because you don't happen to agree with the cause. No, you're supposed to stand up and say you have a right to express that no matter what, even if you don't agree with it. I've done segments where we talk about the history of the Supreme Court and their decisions on free speech and free expression. Dude, they decided the KKK has a right to march through a majority Jewish town because it was a peaceful rally. You know who defended the KKK in that case and won? the ACLU. So that's how much we believe in free speech. That's how much. As long as it's not direct threats of violence, libel, or slander, you get to do it. So if we can defend, if reasonable people who believe in civil liberties and free expression can defend the KKK marching through a town with people they don't like to spread their terrible message, obviously everybody out there can say, even if I don't agree with, you know, setting up a Palestinian state, which I do agree with, by the way, well, I can say they have a right to say it and not get extra punishment from the state. And everybody who supports this shouldn't be called a Jew hater. So it's absolutely ridiculous that the double standards that exist and the people who refuse to stick to their principles when it's an issue they don't particularly care for. Let's all be consistent and let's all be reasonable about this. And also, I've argued a million times, but we don't need to go down this rabbit hole. We should force Israel into that two-state deal. It would be great if the U.S. said, yeah, you know what? Boycotts, divestments, and sanctions. And I'm not singling out Israel. I actually would support it for Saudi Arabia. I would support it for other countries that are violating human rights to force them to improve their record. Not by going in and starting a war, but in the case of Israel, in the case of Saudi, okay, we cut off funding, and okay, we do sanctions. That's how, you know, you can get change that way. It worked with Iran. So, yeah, I do support those things to force Israel to the table to get a two-state deal. And no, that doesn't make me a Jew hater, and you know it. Okay. David Pakman was answering some viewer questions, and he got an interesting one on conspiracies.
Last question today is from Sophia. Sophia said, hey, what conspiracy theories are you guys still surprised that some people really believe? The moon landing one is pretty high on my list, the idea that that was staged. That's one that comes to mind. Vaccines cause autism is one that has been so thoroughly debunked that that one comes to mind. But what about you? The Paul McCartney died thing is another one.
Contrails is a big one for me. That one, and of course the picture we put up, the 9/11 thing. Although, for some reason, what makes a conspiracy theory more, I don't know, more prolific than others? The 9/11 one is not going anywhere.
It's also more recent, though. You know, I think that that's another factor. It's more recent than JFK or whatever else.
On 9/11, it's clearly not an inside job. It's not a conspiracy. Building 7 was fucking bizarre, though, and I think everybody can acknowledge that. It didn't get hit with a plane, and it eventually went down. So, you know, there are many bizarre occurrences that happened on 9/11 that, honestly, the official report doesn't adequately address that makes many, many reasonable people go, okay, that's weird. Now, again, that doesn't mean you make the giant leap of logic to, well, the government planned it all, that's what happened. No, that's ridiculous. But it does mean that the people who try to just shut down all discussion and act like they have all the answers, they're kind of equally ridiculous. Or maybe not equally ridiculous, but they're also being ridiculous. Which gets to my broader point on conspiracies, which is, okay, some of them are real, and some of them are not at all real, and they're ridiculous and preposterous. And we should acknowledge that. But I feel like people, oftentimes they fall into two camps. One is like, you know, every conspiracy ever is real, okay? It just is what it is. And the other camp is, they're all not real. No, you have to look at each individual case and judge it on its own merits and on the evidence. So, for example, what are some real ones? The Tuskegee experiments. That happened. Bay of Pigs, that happened. Operation Northwoods, that happened. So obviously many conspiracies are real. There's some that I still have a question mark in my mind as to what went down. JFK, for example. So there are some that are up in the air. But then there are also ones that, okay, no, not at all. And David hit on some of them there. I mean, one of them, the moon landing, shut the fuck up. Another one is every single one that develops immediately after a mass shooting. Man, Sandy Hook, I swear, in the same week, they were like, we have a 40-minute video now that proves it's all a conspiracy. Stop. We've covered stories on the same day after some attacks. You had Alex Jones go out there and call it a false flag. The same day. How do you know? It just fucking happened. It just happened. So, to me, those are the most egregious. The ones where after every single giant mass shooting, people go, oh, conspiracy, the government to come take away your guns. Okay, but you morons, they're not even proposing that. Like, they make it seem like it's obvious they're coming to take the guns. But even on the strictest, most rigid proposals from the Democrats, all they called for is an assault weapons ban, a ban on high-capacity magazines, and universal background checks. That's as far as their proposals go. You can look at what their proposals are. None of them ever proposed we're going to take all guns. Nor can you with the Second Amendment. So you say, like, oh, this is part of the conspiracy to take the guns. Well, they haven't done it, and even their proposals went nowhere near that far. So all the conspiracies based on that are total horseshit, complete and utter horseshit. We couldn't even get a watered-down background check bill passed, and these guys think Obama's going to go around and take over 300 million guns in circulation. It is beyond ridiculous. So, yes, some we should all just laugh at and mock and shame because they deserve it. Others are real, and some are kind of up in the air. But overall, it was a fascinating conversation that they're having on conspiracies. Okay. All right, let's go to the Burkini Ban
segment. A lot of you have been waiting for.
There's been a big controversy recently over the Muslim burkini. There are a few towns and localities in France that have banned them. I believe the number was 3 as of last week, but I think today it's up to 5. Now, since the original banning, a French court upheld the ban, and a judge said that burkinis can cause offense, and the punishment of a fine and taking off the burkini is, quote, necessary, appropriate, and proportionate. Well, now we have the first pictures of this policy in action. There's a logical consequence of this policy. You can see what's happening here. Armed police officers walk up to this woman on the beach and say, okay, we're going to need you to go ahead and take that off. So what's my takeaway from this? Well, look, there are two totally separate things that are true at the same time in this conversation. So the first thing is the burkini, and more broadly, you know, the burqa, the niqab, etc., those things are extremely conservative. They just are. Now, you know, today you have this new group of people that can put a spin on it, and, you know, they say, well, no, my interpretation of it is, and I've heard this before, you know, Muslim women saying, us women are so precious that we're like diamonds, we're like jewels, and we need to be covered up, and therefore this is empowerment, this isn't disempowerment. So this is my view of it. Look, I'm not begrudging your personal view of it. You could view it however you want on a personal basis and at a personal level. That's totally fine. But I'm saying, understand that from a more general view, its roots are extremely conservative, and it is extremely fundamentalist. And the whole idea of covering up women does stem from the idea that, okay, women are property. And, you know, you don't have individual rights, you don't have freedom, and the man decides he wants to cover you up because you are like his property. So, you know, you can take that mindset and that ideology and rationalize it or come up with a new reason why you think it's okay and why you think you choose to do it. Again, that's fine. But just understand the roots of it. There's no denying that it's extremely conservative and fundamentalist in its nature. So that's one thing that's true on this. I don't like it when people try to force other people to pretend like, no, it's totally liberal and, you know, it's totally empowering. No, again, you could view it like that, but the roots of it are clear. And the whole idea of covering up women does stem from misogyny and sexism within fundamentalist Islam.
And look, you don't have to take my word for it. Go read the fucking books. There's a hadith that says that women are, quote, mentally deficient. That's not very empowering. That's the exact opposite. So, look, I'm against that. That's not okay. That's not cool. Women are not mentally deficient. I do not think women are mentally deficient. There are, you know, in Islam, there are different rules for inheritance, and women get less than men. That is quite clearly not saying you are equal. That's saying the opposite. So don't insult our intelligence by saying the only interpretation of this that makes sense is to say that covering up women is liberal. It's not, okay? Again, I don't begrudge you if you said, well, here's my argument as to why I perceive it that way. That's fine. But when you yell at other people for saying, dude, that's super fundamentalist and conservative, you're wrong. Okay, that's point number one, and that's a very important point. Point number two is I, of course, wouldn't ban them. You want to know why? Dude, I wouldn't ban you from walking around in a KKK outfit. I wouldn't ban you from walking around in a Nazi outfit. And that's the point, is people act like, well, it's simple. You just ban the thing that is super conservative and fundamentalist and bad, and then that's good, right? Now we have a more secular, more liberal society. No, you just open the door to sheer authoritarianism. Because, okay, so next, do you ban nuns? I hate to break it to you. Nuns cover up very much like conservative Muslim women. So do you ban nuns? And if you don't, well, then you're admitting that I'm specifically targeting one religion, and then that is an attack on freedom of religion. So, okay, so do you ban nuns, yes or no? How about priests and their goofy-ass dresses? How about that? Do you ban Orthodox Christians and their goofy dresses and their goofy hats? Or how about Orthodox Jews and their traditional clothes? Guys, I live maybe 30 minutes away from a community of, Orthodox Jews, and they all dress in that traditional garb, and they all have the goofy beard. And when I look at that, I go, oh, you guys are silly. Like, this is, it's more likely that you're literalists and fundamentalists, and you're wearing a costume. You're a grown-ass man wearing a costume. And it shows that, just like with all these other religious, all this religious attire, you miss the ball. You miss the whole idea of modern civilization. And that's not liberal. It's not secular. But am I going to ban you from wearing it? No, of course not. Because in a free society, you get to wear whatever the fuck you want to wear. Okay, now, again, some people will rightly point out, but many of them haven't chosen. That's true. So how do we attack that problem? Well, we absolutely have to. This is non-negotiable in my mind. Secular schools. You have to have secular schools because, that's the only way you get education that's actually real education. Like, to say, oh, religious schools are equal to secular schools, that's just not true. In religious schools, they could teach creationism, for example, and say, oh, this is what's true, and forget evolution. Okay, well, now you're just lying to the kids, and that's not okay. So the state should say, no, secular schools are the way to go, and that's what we do here. And then if you give people a secular education, well, then you're letting them know, here are the facts, and you make your own decision. And given the facts, many more people will choose to not dress in a conservative religious way and in a fundamentalist way. And if there are some who still do choose it, well, okay, then you got to let them do it. And don't say, it's not the case that every woman who's wearing this was forced by somebody in their family. In some cases, that's true, and we're against that. But there are some who choose it, and they tell you they choose it. And for you to say, no, I disagree with you, that doesn't mean anything. They're telling you what they chose. So it doesn't matter if you disagree. They could still wear it. You know, I could tell an Orthodox Jewish person or a nun, like, okay, I don't think that you chose to wear this. They say, okay, it doesn't matter what the fuck you think. I chose to wear it. I'm going to wear it. So what am I going to do? Come in there with a gun and say, I'm going to need you to take that off? That's ridiculous. And then on top of all this, guy, the fucking wetsuit looks exactly like the burkini. You want to talk about a loophole? So what if they show up in a wetsuit and they're like, I need you to take off your burkini? And then they just say, no, this is a wetsuit. This is a wetsuit. I wear this every time I come to the beach. I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean? It's a wetsuit. I've always worn this. This isn't a burkini. I don't believe in burkinis. I'm wearing a wetsuit. Well, what are they going to do? You're not banned. Wetsuits aren't banned under under the law. So it's just a goofy way to try to attack a real issue. Like, don't get me wrong. It is a real issue that there are people who are wearing conservative fundamentalist dress. And here's the main point. We should be able to logically argue against something and say, that's not cool, that represents fundamentalism and oppression of women and misogyny, we should be able to argue against that and say it's not good, while at the same time saying, having said that, if you really do choose to wear it, I respect your right to wear it. Again, I would let people wear fucking KKK outfits. I'd let people wear fucking Nazi outfits. You know, you could walk around however, you could put your fucking underwear on your head. I don't give a fuck. You could walk around in a Halloween costume every single day. That's the point of a free society. So two separate thoughts are true at the same time. Yes, conservative fundamentalist dress is conservative and fundamentalist, and I'm against it. That's not okay. It's not good. Like, you're not a hero for dressing in a way that says, I believe in mythologies and that they're literally true. That's silly. But yeah, I'm not going to force you to take it off. Don't be ridiculous. Okay, so that's the first thing on the burkini. Now, the second thing is more broadly on, you know, the burqa, the niqab, the hijab, the headscarf, different female Muslim attire. BBC reports here, Police Scotland has announced women from Muslim communities may now wear the hijab as part of their uniform. It is part of an attempt to encourage Muslim women to consider pursuing a career in the force. Okay. Now, this one, I'm against. Now, some people are going to say, well, that doesn't make any sense. You're just for it there, now you're against it here. Why? This is for a government job, and you're giving people special treatment. So, if they said, okay, to try to get more Muslim women on the police force, we're going to allow, we've now gotten rid of our ban on headwear, so anybody could wear headwear. Well, then I'd say, okay, that's fine, whatever. But they're not saying that. They're saying, specifically for Muslim women, you can wear whatever you want on your head, but if you're a secular person, let's say, I don't know, you're a dude who's going bald and you're really embarrassed and you want to fucking show your head and you want to wear a hat. And they say, no, you're not allowed to cover your head, but they're allowed to cover their head because they're Muslim women. Well, then you just said religion gets special treatment, not equal treatment, and I'm against it. So again, if you say, well, we're just getting rid of our, you know, restrictions on headwear and anybody can wear whatever headwear they want, then that's fine. I'm cool with it. But if you say, no, I'm gonna allow headwear just for Muslim women and just for this religious reason, well, then you're giving religion special treatment. It's not equal treatment, and I'm against it. And look, this all gets down to the whole point of secularism. What is secularism? I think a lot of people don't fully understand what secularism is. I think I know a thing or two about it. What's the name of my channel again? So secularism is a non-religious government. It's a non-religious government that allows for freedom and is neutral. So in other words, in a secular society, you're allowed to be Muslim. You're allowed to be Buddhist, you're allowed to be Hindu, you're allowed to be Christian, you're allowed to be atheist, you're allowed to be agnostic, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be. As long as you're not hurting anybody else, and as long as you're not forcing your government onto everybody else, forcing your religion onto everybody else through the government. So, you understand? That's super important. In other words, secularism means there will be no religion forced on anybody through this government, and we have checked out of religious issues. But in that society, you're still allowed to be whatever you want to be. So secularism is very distinctly different from state-enforced irreligiosity. And you get state-enforced irreligion in many communist societies, for example. So China, they discourage people being religious. You know, obviously, not to go to the extreme examples here, but Stalin and the Soviet Union. It wasn't a secular government. It was a state-enforced irreligious government. So in other words, the state is not religious, but also we're going to try to force the people to not be religious either. No, that I'm against, because that's fundamentally anti-freedom. So in a secular government, you can be Muslim, you can be Buddhist, you can be Jewish, you can be Christian, you can be an atheist, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be. And the government can't try to force you to be something else, but you also can't force the government to just enforce your religious views on everybody else. So there's a big difference there. And what France is doing by going down this road with banning the burkini is they're not saying we're a secular society. They're saying we are going to be a government that forces people to be irreligious to a degree. That's not cool, man, and I don't agree with that. You can argue against the conservatism and fundamentalism and religion without resorting to bans that aren't going to change anything. Did you know the sales of the burkini shot up over 200% since this ban? You just accomplished the exact opposite of what you wanted to do. The whole idea was we want people to not like it as much because it's conservative and it's fundamentalist and that's not cool. Yeah, but you just had the opposite effect. So even on pure practical grounds and pragmatic grounds, you're being ridiculous and you're wrong. So there's a way to argue against it without banning it and therefore creating a legitimate victim complex that feeds this fundamentalism and this conservatism within Islam. So, and you also, I mean, not to get this, I don't like bringing up this argument because it's not the strongest argument, but yeah, now you can have fucking, you know, real bad dudes, Muslim fundamentalists, put on fucking posters the picture of police with guns making a woman take off her clothes, and you just increased recruitment. So, no, it's the wrong way to go. You can be against it without banning it. Let's be clear about that. And it's, on the burkini ban, I don't even think it's close, the issue. The allowing of Muslim women to cover up on the Scottish police force, yeah, I really don't think that one's close either. If you allow it for them, you got to allow headwear for everybody, but they didn't. They just allowed it for the Muslim women. So I'm against that because it's favoritism, not equality. Okay. I'm going to go a little bit over today because I have to, even though I don't have the time. Fuck me, I take forever. The Iranian government is yet again cracking down on young liberals and secularists in the country. Phi.org reports here, Iran has arrested or summoned around 450 social media users over their online activities, a website linked to the powerful Revolutionary Guards said on Tuesday. Girdab, the cyber arm of the guards, said the people targeted administered pages on social networks, including smartphone applications such as Instagram, Telegram, and WhatsApp. Quote, these people were carrying out immoral activities, insulted religious beliefs, or had illegal activities in the field of fashion. Okay, that's beyond ridiculous. So they insulted religious beliefs. Who cares? I'm doing that right now. Fuck your religion. It's stupid. It's mythology. It's not true. Stop acting like it's not 2016. It is 2016. Go read a book. Go look at the evidence and become non-religious. So the idea that there's something wrong with that is just so sad, and it's such a restriction of freedom. You should be allowed to voice that opinion clearly, obviously. Then they go, no. Oh, you're against religion? Well, then that's a crime. And then also they say illegal activities in the field of fashion. You know what that means? The fucking women weren't covering up. Okay, look, we just discussed the burkini ban. I'm against the burkini. It's conservative. It's fundamentalist. But I wouldn't ban it because there are some women who genuinely want to wear it. And it's just a matter of basic freedom. This is the opposite problem. And we should bring this up, too. The fact that in many countries, women are forced to cover up. So we have to be against the forced cover up of women. And this is what they're doing here, and they say, oh, if you're not covered up, that's illegal activities in the field of fashion. Fuck off. Fuck off. So free all these social media users today. They're not criminals. You know they're not criminals. But the only good news is the Iranian government really are sowing the seeds of dissent because the population overall is very young, and they're more secular and they're more liberal than the older dinosaurs, and eventually the ideas are going to bubble up to the surface, and you're going to have a society that's pushed more in the direction of secularism and liberalism because the people have honestly had enough. And then, you know, I should have brought that up in the burkini ban segment too, actually.
10 seconds.
The other thing I'm going to bring up here because I think it's very important is that there are many Muslim countries where women are forced to cover up. That's not okay either. Like, let's be clear. That's horrendous. So we need to be able to support the freedom in the West of women to wear and do whatever they want, and also say, well, obviously the compulsory veiling and covering up of women in Saudi Arabia, Iran, and elsewhere, that should be changed too. So it's stupid when people from those countries who support those laws say, I cannot believe that you are making women take off their burkinis. How dare you control women like that? Bitch, look at what you're doing. You're forcing them to cover up. So stop, stop, stop. No. Again, I support women's freedom across the board. I'm against the forced veiling and compulsory covering up of women in many of these countries. They should be able to do whatever they want, and I'm in favor of them doing whatever they want here too. So we're consistent, unlike many other people in this discussion. Okay, sorry, I had to add that to the conversation. That was for the other segment. All right, let me give you some more. We have an absolutely heartbreaking story about a brutal murder in Pakistan, the Independent reports here. A man has confessed to murdering his wife in the name of honor 15 years after allegedly killing his first wife for the same reason. The man in his 50s has been charged with slitting his wife's throat in Pakistan during an argument and been arrested by police. His 30-year-old wife is his second spouse to suffer death at his hands. Nearly 1,100 women were murdered by relatives who believe they had dishonored their family in Pakistan last year, according to a report by the country's own Human Rights Commission. Quote, by failing to hold perpetrators of so-called honor killings accountable for their crimes, the Pakistani state has been forfeiting its duty to the victims and letting a climate of impunity take reign, a spokesperson for Amnesty International has said. All right, so think about this. There are many honor killings happening, and oftentimes the government's like, what are you going to do, bro? Happens. No, doesn't happen. Do your fucking job. Somebody murdered somebody. That is the worst crime. What are you doing? But they go on to explain in this piece, well, there are loopholes. You mean, fucking loopholes to murder? They're like, yeah. So the loopholes are, you know, somebody in the family could just say, I pardon you. And then all of a sudden, they're no longer guilty of murder because, hey, it was for the honor. They did it for honor. They did it to preserve the honor. So they murdered the person. And this is something that they say, no, totally cool in Pakistan. Oh, come the fuck on, man. I mean, think about how stupid this is the thing I can't get over. Like, woman, you did something that besmirches me and my honor, so I'm going to kill you because you hurt our honor. So how am I going to handle this? By murdering you. No, I think the thing that really destroyed your honor is the fact that you're a fucking bloody murderer. I think that's the issue. You slit her fucking throat because she hurt your feelings. And then the idea that, like, well, I mean, these women, come on, you got to keep them in control because they're all uber emotional and whatnot. Look at this fucking guy. You did something I don't like. I must kill you. I must kill you. You're the emotional little punk bitch. God, that makes no sense. The thing that really hurts your honor is doing a murder, because then everybody knows you're a murderer, you're a bad person, you're loathsome, you're savage, you're barbaric. And the whole time it's like they do it and they think, no. Not only am I not barbaric, I'm not even just equal to my wife, I'm above her. I'm above her. I'm the most moral. No, you're not. And this is why, you know, beliefs are so important, because it is possible to be raised and brainwashed in a society where they say, no, this is the way to go. You got to preserve honor by murdering women. Well, no, that idea is so preposterously wrong that we need to change the coding in your mind. Change the fucking hardware and software and whatever the fuck else we got to change to let you know this isn't a thing. This is a thought virus that you believe. It's a virus. It's not a true belief. It's a ridiculous belief, and you're the bad guy here. And guess what? In both cases, what does he say? She cheated on me. Yeah, I'm sure. Number one, I'm sure that both of them cheated on you, and it's not just that you're a jealous prick. Number two, if they did cheat on you, good, they should have. You obviously are a fucking lunatic, and guess what? Cheating does not merit the death penalty. But I had to do it with my honor, my honor. You never had any honor to begin with. That's fucking clear. Okay, finally, real quick, I got to squeeze this in. We have an absolutely jaw-dropping discovery here from some scientists, CNN reports. In a discovery that has been years in the making, researchers have confirmed the existence of a rocky planet named Proxima B, orbiting Proxima Centauri, the closest star to our sun, according to a new study. It is the closest exoplanet to us in the universe. Given the fact that Proxima B is within the habitable zone of its star, meaning liquid water could exist on the surface, it may also be the closest possible home for life outside of our solar system. Because of its location, the researchers hope it provides an opportunity for possible robotic exploration in the coming centuries. Proxima b is a mere 4.2 light years away from our solar system. It's not only the closest terrestrial planet found, it's probably the closest planet outside our solar system that will ever be found, because there is no star closer to the solar system than this one. So the planet is 1.3 times the size of Earth, and it orbits its star every 11 days, and it's between 86 degrees and 104 degrees if it indeed has an atmosphere. It doesn't have an atmosphere, it'll be about negative 25 degrees. So this is fucking amazing, man. And you know what my main takeaway from this was? They found that a planet this close is in the habitable zone of its star. This is fucking right next door. So what does that show you? It shows you that in the universe, things don't come in singles, bitch. They come, you know, with multiples. Is that a thing you can say? Okay, I don't know. I don't know if the wording was proper. So what this proves is there's probably more habitable planets than any of us could have ever wrapped our mind around. And if there's more habitable planets, that means it's much more likely there's water, which means it's much more likely there's life elsewhere. And, you know, it's almost a fucking statistical guarantee at this point that there is some sort of life elsewhere. I'm not saying equal to human intelligence. I'm not saying greater than human intelligence. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. But are there possibly some, you know, some more basic forms of life, things that we can eventually discover? Yes. Yes. And that is fucking fascinating, man. God, that's fascinating. The thought that, you know, there can be many Earths or things that are similar to Earth and with different kinds of creatures and things. It's like we're living in a sci-fi movie, but it's real life, so it's even more interesting. And there's actual facts of reality that can blow your mind, you know, more so than anything anybody can cook up and write in a sci-fi book, in a fiction novel. So I know my nerdy side is showing here, but man, am I excited about this. Really? Right next door, they found a planet in the habitable zone of its star? That's unbelievable. I mean, if we don't fucking destroy ourselves with a nuclear war, with climate change, or with a million other things, well, then we have a really interesting and bright future. But unfortunately, I fear we may just destroy ourselves before we actually get to go all the way down the path of this various cool shit. Okay. All right, love you guys. Out of time. We'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. Peace.